Oh my god. Oh my goodness. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Coffee Table Talk. I am your host, Coffee Horse, and with me today, of course, I have my co-host, Toast.
Hello.
And we have the fine guests that run Dungeon Report. Say howdy.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, of course.
Hello.
Of course.
Glad to be here.
Went from Chuck.
Happy to be here. Happy to be here.
Okay, let's get off the Chuck Norris subject.
All right, yeah.
We can't do it again.
I can't afford to edit that much more of Chuck
Norris. You can't cut that much content?
No. I literally have to leave that 35 minutes in because it's just, it's part of the conversation.
It's like half the episode.
And the best part is we talked about TTRPG and putting it into it, and it's just, I have to leave it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. You have to.
Okay, so I'm going to...
In fact, you got to stat him out now. That's what you have to do.
I already have. He is a level 30 monk gunslinger.
The level is so appropriate.
It is, isn't it? Level 30, too. Like, not level 20. No, level 30. This guy's
not all... Yeah, yeah. You're not screwing around. It's not 21. It's not 22. He's straight to 30, dude.
All stats maxed. just 30s across the board.
Oh. That's so strong.
Oh, my God. All right.
Never in my wildest dreams.
Oh, that has to be like an exclusive DM club. Monster
unique. It's just Shrek Norris.
Yeah. The layers, the swamp. One giveaway. The layer is the universe, bro. He's at home everywhere he goes. He has advantage everywhere.
Oh, I'm so glad you guys introduced us to this.
It's auto crit.
It's auto crit. Yeah, you don't even roll.
He has like 12 different attacks.
He's immune to all damage of all types.
Fuck a resistance. Straight immunity.
You can't even use time stop because he's faster than time stop.
Oh.
He doesn't need counter spell for it. He just resists.
It's natural resistance.
He just stops it.
There's no anti-magic field. He just stops.
Oh my god.
He just looks at you and says no. And it just doesn't work.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Okay. Well, I'm going to start with our first topic/question. Okay. What keeps you hydrated both in and out of D&D? Like, in your day-to-day and when you're playing a D&D character, what keeps them hydrated?
Oh, that's a good question. Do you want to go out or you want me to...
You start with this.
D&D? I think I identify as a dwarf a little too much, so... There's rampant alcoholism in a lot of my characters, usually because they're either brewing or drinking the stuff that they make. So I think that's the one on the D&D side. Life is like, I'm pretty vanilla. I like my water. And then in between, you know, it's the coffees and a good scotch. That's the kick back and knock things down at the end of the day. Good feeling drink. So I think that's a summary. So that's helpful.
Well, I mean, if you ever want to feel like you're just on another level, put black coffee with scotch and then
Dude, the bathroom situation after that would be insane.
Yeah.
Destructive.
You're going to have the best 15 minutes of your life.
Or the worst.
Depends
on how you look at it.
Shoot out.
It's like a shotgun blast.
Oh, that's how you get lift. It's just rocket fuel.
Oh man. Yeah, I think my answer is like kind of the same for real life. I like water, but always got to start the day with a huge cup of coffee or I can't function. I've tried it and you get like, I get like massive headaches. So I'm pretty sure I'm addicted. So coffee horse, glad you're here.
Yeah. Hey.
D&D wise, I've never really thought about it. But now I think it would just be, you know, whatever's in the tavern, but I do usually play like more chaotic centered characters, like gnomes, that kind of stuff. So whatever weird fantasy drink you've got, I'm game. I think like I have played a session where the DM just started riffing random drinks and I spent most of my gold just buying it just for fun. Just to see what would happen.
I mean, that's
great.
That's a fair answer. whatever the DM can make.
Yeah, like it's got to be there for a reason, right? Like they wouldn't just put random things in there.
Yeah, that would give you a tail.
We call this
or just larger ears.
Yeah.
It really sounds like something I would date players with for sure, as yeah. Drinks like that.
Slowly just converting you into a rat. This is called sewer slum.
But you brand it differently every single time you get a drink. Like there's six different drinks, but they're all actually the same thing.
Yeah. The only thing different tasting about it is one is the temperature that they are stored in and if they are carbonated or not. That's the only thing different. Scolding.
They come in different volumes too. The bartender can't serve them, you know, in the same quantity. Otherwise it'd be a little suspicious. You know, you shoot one, you have to sip the other, you gotta chug one.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, you're a sewer rat.
Yeah, you're just a rat. You just made a polymorph potion inside your stomach.
Just, yeah. Oh yeah, it's just the components for a polymorph potion. That'd be even better.
Yeah. Hey, you become a rat. The barkeep throws you in the basement. Level one mission right there. Clear the rats from the basement, and it turns out it's all polymorphed.
Oh my god.
That would be nuts.
I'm going to write that one down, actually, because that's a pretty good idea.
What's worse, level one mission killing polymorph humans or Anakin Skywalker and the younglings?
Oh, that's a good one.
There's no good answer to that.
Stand vibe.
Stand vibe, yeah.
That's all I felt.
I think I'm gonna go out there and say it. I think younglings is worse.
Is it?
Yeah, I feel like D&D rat people might be slightly worse people than some young kids that want to become Jedi. So you pick some rat people out of a bar. You don't know what those guys were up to. You don't know how many corrupt villains he's thrown down there by accident. Hell, you might be helping improve society by accident. Anakin Skywalker, younglings, 100% wrong.
Fair. That's fair.
This is the chaotic adventure in me justifying the murder of rat people. That's what that was.
Oh man!
Fuck him!
Fuck him!
I got handed a mission, man. What'd you want?
I know it would be really funny if it's just like they're not like true polymorphs; they're just all polymorphed. There's just a really long duration. So as you kill one, it just a fucking human.
Yeah.
I feel like the ultimate...
go past that like one HP threshold, and then they pop into a human and take the rest and die immediately. The horror.
Imagine that's your first campaign playing D&D.
I know.
That's your first campaign.
I think it would almost be worse if you like whiff the damage roll and they survive somehow.
Oh god.
And now you have to deal with that. Do you finish the job or are you like, oh shit?
I feel like at that point you would have to.
Again, first time D&D campaign, bro. I don't know, man.
Talk about setting the stage.
I feel like the ultimate twist to that is that you trick a player into creating Charlie from
It's Always Sunny
in Philadelphia as a character, and having him be the one to murder all of the rat people. That would be the ultimate twist. Just, you have one illiterate guy with a 2x4 with nails in it going after the rat people in the basement, and he doesn't know they're people. Oh man, this is how you know we write for D&D. It's just so sadistic sometimes. It's just,
but it's the best.
All you're doing is setting up traps.
Sometimes that's the best. Sometimes when you just set up something like nuts like that for your players, and you know your players are going to enjoy it, just watching the chaos unfold is just you just can't beat it. You just can't beat it sometimes.
Oh yeah,
100%. Yeah, we fully agree with that. It's I think it's also their version of the chaos, because it's never the version you thought it was going to be. That's the reality.
Right. They end up saving all of the rat people by knocking them out, by not killing them.
But to figure that out, they'd have to potentially kill one. Yeah. Yeah.
Got to do what you got to do, man.
I know. So, hey, sometimes that's how it goes, you know?
Set up a barbarian class that's just blind rage, so they can't see, they're just hitting.
Oh my god. Somehow getting progressively worse. I don't know how it's happening.
That would be the wizard thing to do. Just see a room full of rats, I'm just gonna drop a fucking fire on them. Why not?
Yeah.
We had a guy that was obsessed with using caltrops, and he could never get a result out of it. And all I'm picturing is he throws caltrops into the room, and all of these rats die randomly on caltrops and just pop back into human beings. It's just just mass murder. Not even okay.
What do you do then? He probably walked up.
I just sprinkled the room with caltrops. I didn't know we were all going to die. Well, stop using caltrops. They're useless.
Yeah, that's how if someone
clearly not.
Right. Yeah, I know, right?
Someone uses fireball too much, just put them in a. I was crazy once. They put me in a room, a rubber room, a rubber room with rats. Rats make me crazy.
Oh man, imagine trying to explain that situation after.
Yeah.
You know, you come back up. Hey, they were rats. I threw a fireball in there, closed the door, opened it. It was the best magic trick I ever did.
Oh my god, you about made me spit out my drink.
Sorry, I didn't mean to wait for this good day.
Abracadabra. Hundreds of dead people.
Would the room be large enough to hold all of the rat people that polymorph back?
No.
Would it matter if they're corpses?
I feel like it does, because if the room is too small, everything gets squished against each other.
That's true. If it's like a closet with like four rats in it, it's going to be a real tight closet real quick.
No.
Corpses just start falling out of the door towards you. Yeah. It's all of a sudden a scene from Indiana Jones and you have to run for your life.
It's a human corpse boulder chasing you.
Oh no!
This is starting to sound like something out of Dark Souls. Just open the door, boom, ball of corpses.
I mean, it's very dark skull at blah, 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 blah. You know what I was trying to say?
Yeah, I got
the you. Ultimate vocal warm up.
Oh, okay. You guys make monsters and items. All right.
Yeah.
Where do your So for me, you know, like DMs always have an inspiration for their campaign. You know, it comes from something. What inspires a lot of the monsters and items you make?
Okay. Well,
I can see the trauma in his face, because there's a bit of a story behind it.
I'll give you a bit of a peek behind the curtain. We have like a Google Doc going now, and it really starts with Hovog waking up at 3 a.m. in the morning in a panic or whatever he's doing at home, you know, and he just jots down this insane idea. And then the next morning he's like, hey, you should check the Google Doc. It might cause nightmares. And it's like the most unhinged thing that I now have to like pull back into reality. And I don't know where that's coming from. Like, I don't know if he's having night terrors or anything, like what's spawning this stuff, but there's some pretty, like, the stuff we've released, I would say, is on, like, the tamer side. we do have a lot of like, not Halloween-esque, but a lot more like horror stuff in the pipeline. Probably because we are coming fresh off like a modified Curse of Strahd campaign. So that is really bubbling in my mind as well. Yeah, that's the view I get on this, because he just throws them at me and then I start with it. I don't know where it's spawning from though.
Yeah, I can shed some light on his perspective. I don't have night terrors, fortunately. I can confirm that much. I might snore, but I'm not sure. But aside from that, the ideas are like, I think it's a. Without getting too like, esoteric about this, like it's nice to have this like creative state that you can stay in. So like I try to stay on the mindset of what kind of creative, like productive ideas can be generated. And then that like it's not a flow state, but it's like a constant like simmer. And that's the only way I think it works, because if you're constantly digging for it, you're going to inevitably hit writer's block. And like, to put it in perspective, I've terrorized with like 70 or 80 odd creatures at this point.
Yep. It's a lot.
Not all of which are statted out, obviously, but a lot of them are, and they are kind of in our pipeline. But the wake up at 3 a.m. is not untrue, because he'll get a message from me at like around 5 or 6 in the morning, our time, and yeah. He'll be like looking at this thing, and I'll be like, this is a good idea, right? And it's just like, I don't want to tip our hand on some of the stuff that we have in the pipeline, but some of it is some pretty morbid shit. Like, there's just no two ways about it. Like, things that ruin people's existences and erase them from reality, like things like that. And then there's like tamer stuff that sometimes you wake up and you're like, you know what'd be fun? A candy that only goblins can eat, and it'll transport them to where they want to be. So the planar poppers, we actually just dropped this for free. But if you eat it and you're not, you know, a goblinoid or speak goblin, it's just chaos. There's like a whole roll table of like all of the bad things that could happen to you. So it's a duality. Like I come in with something a little crazy or like far-fetched. Sometimes they're inspired by like film, television, or loosely based on things that have like inspired us recently, like the Curse of Strahd campaign, I think is a great example from Aura. It kind of leads us into playing into more of like the Halloween darkness nightmare aspect of D&D. But other times, you know, we just want to have something playful, whimsical, and fun. And you let it cook for long enough, it kind of rolls out. It's a terrible answer, I know, but it's kind of the reality of how we produce. And the dichotomy of his like pragmatism, like he's encyclopedic when it comes to D&D knowledge. I'm more instinct, I think, if we had to compare the two of us, like the relationship is that. But when instinct meets knowledge, it kind of meshes really well. And when we've put together the final product, it's actually a very nice harmonized balance of the two. You don't want to know what our working sessions sound like.
Oh, no, they're brutal.
You don't want to know what sound like either.
No.
Yeah, but man, the results are pretty good, we think.
Yeah, like we've been friends for a very long time, so we're very comfortable with just ripping each other apart.
And if something's bad, we just say it.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not nice at all, but it's a necessary process. And he's not wrong about sending it to me at like 5 a.m. Like I'm up at 5 for my day job, so I get to either have my day ruined with some monstrosity that he's thought up, or, you know, go about my day and go to work. But yeah, that's kind of the way things are brewing on our side.
You guys made Bean Boozle.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Explode.
Yeah. Did you get the teleporting one or the one that makes you shit yourself?
Could be, could not be. You never know, right? It's just what you get.
Yeah.
But I think the fun of it for us is too that like when we do it on a regular basis, or when we don't get to play, this kind of fills the void. So we don't lose that comfort of staying in the game, and that makes it really like engaging for us. So it's almost like it feeds itself in a weird way. Like the inspiration train is good as long as it's moving. And I think if we stop for a long period of time, it might be a little trickier to get back on the proverbial horse.
I mean, I can totally see that. Every so often, our campaign is very much off of their decisions. Like, I don't write ahead. I have a structure that I have set myself that is sitting somewhere in my Google Docs that I have not looked at since I've started it. But the story literally comes from their decisions and the chaos that they want to create. I tried to make it almost, I think the best way to say it, because, you know, like D&D is full of all these other, that's the best way to say it. You know, you have very plot-driven ones, which are like Call of Duty-esque, you know, mission-based. You're going from mission to mission.
Objective focus.
Yes, objective focus. And then you have ones which are more story mode, you know, like playing Dying Light or, you know, a very story mode-esque. You know, you can go explore around and there's other fun things to go do around, but you're still on a path. Yep. I tried to bring almost a real life aspect to mine where there's all this shit going on that I have written that comes in at random times where I just roll a couple dice and, oh, you know, this is what's going on. This is what's going here, you know, for what I have set, but they don't know what's going on. Just like in real life, there's shit going all over on the world, but they have no clue. I tried to bring that real life aspect and they can go wherever they want. Nothing holds them back. They can set themselves to their own path.
I think that's really great. And what just tying this back to what we do a little bit in a way, when we envision a creature beyond its kind of inception as a concept, we start to think about, you know, how does this plug into a variety of scenarios? And then what is the value to a DM, right? And really, like, your story versus the next story versus someone else's story, like, there's this whole, like, spectrum of play styles and DM styles that is very hard to cater directly to constantly. But what we tried to do is make them kind of agnostic from setting and story, but give them a story-driven core so that you could build the narrative around it or you could plug it into a narrative where it contributes in a way that's constructive and conducive to the rest of, you know, your world building or your storytelling or your kind of mission objective. It's a tricky thing to tune and balance, but I think the result is that you get something that seems a little chaotic at face value when you're writing it, but as you implement it, you realize you have more flexibility, and that flexibility is what we really like. We had that challenge a lot because we've written quite a few one shots, and we're both very like into the idea of playing one shots and having short campaigns and short adventures. It's much easier and more palatable for our schedules and for our friends who play, and it's also something we can share with other people if they want to run and use it at certain opportunities. But when you do that, you have a hard time constantly like keeping up the flair or, you know, making something that's going to be different than the last one. You don't want to constantly be running up the tower to get the golden apple and run back down and give it to the wizard, right? Like there's variations of that mode of gameplay, which is not so fun. So we think about these things like, okay, what if it was a one shot? Like what's the real core value of this thing? And then if it works in a one shot, realistically, it could be an episode in a story. It could be a phase in an arc. It could be a recurring problem that occurs throughout like a massive campaign. Or it could be a world ending calamity, because we have a few of those. I don't know. I don't think we've released any of them yet.
No,
but
not yet.
Those kind of titanic things could be a set piece that, you know, you might want to build up to. And like, I like anthologies a lot. Ara can attest to this. He's played in several of the one-shots in one of my anthologies that I run for players. And these are almost like you could work them in an anthology. They could all be standalone episodes and you would have a beginning, middle, end, and they're tidy. They kind of wrap themselves up. But they also live in a big world where all of these things have happened at some point or another, and the anthology is not necessarily sequential. You might pick up somewhere from the beginning, pick up somewhere from the end, and then if everyone shows up, you know, maybe a year or two from now, we might have the Calamity World ending two-shot, three-shot, right? That might wipe the slate clean for all of that. And I think like, I don't want to speak for Ara, but I think that helps us kind of see these things in that light constantly and think and put ourselves in other DM's shoes rather than, you know, our own DM shoes. Because it's hard to escape your own, you know, style of storytelling sometimes.
100%. 100%. I haven't ran a lot of one shots. I've done a few here and there, and it's very odd for me to do a one shot because of my DM style. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out my DM style. Like I've been on this ever growing path, but like when I started this, it was like, this is the core of what I want all of my further stories to be about. I don't want it to be like objective driven is awesome. You know, you can have those types of stories. You can have those story mode type ones, but I want mine to feel like these people are in a real world where shit's just going on and they don't know whether they're going to make it out or how far they're going to get before the world might just blow up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. I think that's like one of the things that I try and do in my campaigns as well. And Hovog can attest to that because I was running Chris Estrad for them. And things were happening, whether they were there or not. And for better or worse, I mean, mostly worse, things happen, you know. But like right off the bat, I ran the starter set, like Lost Mines of Phandelver. And the dragon just sitting there, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't run this 10-year-old campaign. But the dragon that just sits there and is really just like a one-off side quest that may or may not happen. Like, it just feels like it could be part of a bigger world. So there were tons of times where I would just roll and see, like, be like, hey, you guys happen to be on the east side, guess who else is flying by right now, you know?
Toxic or
like stuff like that. Just like, if you do this quest, you might not have time to do this quest,
right?
So you lose that reward. So in that way, it separates itself from a video game where you can go do all the side quests and then come back and do the story way over level, right?
Right.
Things just move as you go. And I think that serves better for the story itself.
Right. My players have no clue what's going on. Like, they've been following this one thing. They're on this track, but they have no clue the 12, 13 other different things that have been happening. They're catching pieces of information of, oh, you know, like, this is happening. And one of our past episodes, like, I mean, they went somewhere to learn some information and they learned that there's an ambush going on. Well, what else was going on during that ambush? They have no clue.
Yeah. I think the absolute worst part of that is that you can't tell anyone. Uh-huh.
And that's the worst part. I have pages and pages of shit that's happening, man. And
yeah,
there's no way for me to share it.
Yeah, even when I was doing it for Chris Estrad, so many times I just wanted to, like, post game be like, man, this is what you guys missed out on, but I can't.
Right?
So
that's like at the end of the campaign, you could be like, yeah, you guys missed this, and this, and plus this.
Yeah.
And these were all of the cool things that would have happened if you would have done those things, you know. But in the end, you guys went on your own path, and that's the whole point.
Yeah, they wrote their own story, and that's the fun of it.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, that's what D&D, I feel like that's the real core of D&D, is it's, we're here to guide and give them description and, like, give them the thing they need to roll for, you know, we have the information, we have all the lore, you know, we're the background to their story. But they are the ones that are writing the story.
Exactly.
I think it's the difference of, like, telling the story versus facilitating the story.
Yeah.
Like, that's the relationship. And I do think the world being active and changing around the players without their knowledge is a huge aspect of a quality world building experience. And I know for a fact, Ara as well as myself, like, we're both huge fans of Terry Pratchett and his writing style and his stories. And, like, for those who are unfamiliar with Terry Pratchett and his Discworld kind of saga or anthology, is probably a good way to put it as well, is that, like, all of this stuff actually has recurring characters that overlap, and they tell stories from the beginning of their life, sometimes from the end of their life, sometimes beyond when, you know, one of these characters existed, but the other is aware of the existence of the previous character. and it might impact their decisions. So it really feels like a lived-in world, like rather than something that's kind of like put up as like a Disneyland structure around what is an obvious path that you have to follow, right? And I think that like that's so much fun. Like that's the real, real fun of it. Like because you let them kind of wander around. It's not this, the word sandbox, I think, is kind of not a great term sometimes because it implies that there's like a limited framework and there's like this material that you can kick around and shape to your will. I think it's like I don't know what the right word for it is yet, but I think it's a little bit more around like it's an organic growth. Like there's an organic trail that you're kind of building out, and sure, you kind of know which way it's going to go generally and how it's going to like form, because you know if you compare it to tree roots, you can only go so far before you hit a boulder or you have to make a turn to get to water. But that general path is visible, but you don't know what the formation of that like root pattern is going to look like and how it's going to intertwine with other roots and reconnect back to the main kind of body. It's the real joy of D&D, I think, for me at least, is that it's like seeing how all of these pieces like flow apart, flow back together, and then while something's doing something over here, how does this get impacted by that? Maybe, you know, 5 or 6, you know, sessions later, right?
Right, right. And for me, you know, like I understand the whole root thing. For me, mine is, it's. I would have to say mine is utter chaos. Mine is chaotic growth. There's no, they may hit a blockade, but the blockade is still a bypass in some way. I give them every option to be as creative and as, and just think of, okay, well, this is what's stopping you at the current moment. What are you going to do? You know? And some of them break the boulder.
There's some really powerful roots out there, man. They go through buildings sometimes. You don't know.
Yeah.
Like mine, it comes with every time you drink coffee, don't you feel a little bit more chaotic? To have a little bit of that chaotic energy inside of you? Yeah. That's my life.
I call it being awake, but yeah.
Well, you feel awake, and then you just there's just a small bee deep down inside you that's just that little bit of chaos of like, I could go rip someone's door off and then just leave. You know, nothing's going to stop me. Like, that's my day-to-day, and that's my D&D day-to-day. There is no structure to it. It's rough, it's gross, it's messy, but it is my chaos.
I can see it. I definitely see it. What did you tell me at one point? It was you're chaotic neutral with a penchant for evil. I think that's how I described my storytelling style and general approach to this.
Absolutely.
It's just like that real true chaos is sometimes that penchant for evil.
I think like the whole party and friend group, they all leaned chaotic neutral and then were doing very evil things under the guise of, no, I'm just being chaotic. I'm like, is the werewolf genocide really chaos, or is it, I don't know.
I had Toast ask me if he could have a decanter of unlimited mayonnaise, and he says, I want to do evil things with this. And I said, well, you're not evil. You aren't evil, so you can't be doing
and that's fine.
Mayonnaise.
But I totally could do evil things with mayonnaise. And not necessarily like horrible, like heinous acts, you know. But I mean, if we need some information and somebody's withholding said information, you might just get waterboarded with a decanter of unlimited mayonnaise.
Oh my God. I was just about to ask, what could you possibly do evil with mayonnaise, a bunch of mayonnaise? That's amazing.
I've been sitting on this idea and I've already come up with about 50 different things he could do with a jar of mayonnaise to cause absolute, utter evil and chaos in about 5 minutes.
That's amazing, and I would love to hear all 50.
I buried that list with other stuff because it's a list. If this comes
totally
up,
fair. Right.
So does he have the decanter of mayonnaise?
No,
to his character?
He has to make it.
Yeah, I have to build it. Which is boring, but
I'm not just.
I'll find a way.
Give you something like that. I'm not just going to hand you a free magic item like that.
I am chef, okay?
But you can
give me the mayonnaise. Make it.
There are ways that you can figure. Anything is possible. There's a way
you can make
that.
I know that. Well, anything is possible. You could just give me the decanter of mayonnaise.
No, no. Mm-mm.
Fair enough. Hey,
Maybe it's like hidden in a cave or something. You gotta go.
I already collapsed that cave. It's gone.
Oh yeah.
maybe it's in another larger container of mayonnaise, and you just can't tell it's the decanter because it's, you know, just all mayo just around.
Yeah.
Maybe you just gotta start looking in every container of mayonnaise.
I'm just constantly scooping mayonnaise, and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe just
until you can build it, just go out and buy a bunch of mayonnaise. If you can't have endless supply, you could have a lot.
There is no carry.
I could. Game.
You technically could have tons and tons of mayonnaise.
I had one player in my campaign who learned that you could throw a lantern and it'll do like mild fire damage. So he bought every lantern in the shop because he was low enough level where he's like, this is a great ranged option. And the visual of this dragonborn fighter with a backpack of dangling lanterns is like real Boy Scout. But like, what are you going to say? You know, he's got the money. The stock is there. I just gave an arbitrary number. I was like, yeah, there's like 50 of them. He's like, cool, here's the money. I want them all. And he's just hucking lanterns.
So, needless to say, he had disadvantage on stealth because he was just a walking light bulb that would clatter and rattle everywhere he went.
Yeah.
I mean, there's advantages and then there's disadvantages, but
absolutely.
To each their own.
Hey, you reach in for a potion, you're pulling out mayo, but that might work. Who knows?
I don't have potions. Just mayo.
Yeah. Just mayo.
Here, I'll pick you up, and just proceeds to pour mayonnaise out of his
throat. The mayo of healing. He's like suffocating them while he's force feeding it.
Here. Are you feeling better yet? How about now? And all you hear is,
that's so great. My character is like, he's not very intelligent, to say the least. So that is exactly how it would go, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like you would
have. Let me rub some mayo on it.
I thought you'd have the power at some point to just like have enough mayonnaise to just suffocate a dragon, just drown it in mayonnaise.
Drop the endless decanter in there. And it's just constantly pouring mayo. No more fire breath. Just mayo.
Just mayo.
He's just covered in mayo.
Probably hot mayo, though.
whole new meaning to whiteout.
Oh, God.
Oh.
It's like, it's off-white. We buy Kraft brand out here.
I got it. This is the idea of this much mayonnaise is almost nauseating to think about.
I know. I was thinking about it. I'm like, an endless decanter of mayonnaise. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's so much mayo.
But cooking and food in D&D is a weird topic too, because it's like,
I love it.
It's kind of like foregone by most people, right? Like, it's just like you're adventuring. It's assumed you have rations or something. Like, when do you eat? Man. What do you eat?
I gotta be cooking. I cook every other day.
He cooks every other day, like every other long rest they do. I'm making some stuff.
I respect that.
I love that. My like the first character I made, so like just. In real life, my background is in biology, like animal biology specifically. So my first character was very invested in that. But I also like to cook, like as a hobby. So I was like, how can I do that in D&D? And I think my DM just got sick of trying to figure out if this monster is edible or not. Because I kept asking, you know.
Can I eat that?
Can I actually
eat a mimic? I was just saying, can I eat that?
Yeah, like, can I eat a mimic? He's like, I don't know.
Can I have some of your tots?
Roll a check to see if it makes you sick. And I was playing like a lizard folk barbarian. So high con, everything is just being, I'm eating it. No problem. No poison, nothing. It was great, man.
Bros, I hear you
kill a big crab, you make king crab legs. Fantastic.
I know. I'm
fantastic. To the
point where he's like, can I eat this?
Might just have to.
You gotta try it.
Yeah, why not?
Wait, this is gonna sound like shameless self-plugging, but we recently did an item that was kind of targeted at cooks and chefs. We did this thing called the Blistering Buckler, And the idea of it is that it's a shield, but it can also be used for cooking. And it was made by battlefield chefs who were stranded. So, like, all of our stuff has a little bit of a story, right? Like, our whole thing is, like, everything is kind of story-driven. All I really want to know is, like, what campaign is that going to end up in? And what the hell is going to get cooked on it? Because, like, you're walking around with a grill, basically. That's always hot. it can sear your enemies, and it can, you know, make a great steak. Why not?
Hell yeah.
Of course, he doesn't really need a grill because his fist can light on fire. So he can just punch meat till it cooks.
That is true.
It's a good way to tenderize.
Immediate tenderizing. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Beat me to it.
That's so funny.
No, I have.
I'm a bit of a new player, so I don't know how a whole lot of things work, and I'm starting to like get my sense of creativity into stuff I want to do. Like this Memorial Day when Cam and I and the rest of the party were recording, I just sent Cam a message and I was like, my character was hammered. Like never been so drunk that before, like before in his life, hammered. And I was just like, put him somewhere, get rid of him, send him somewhere in the middle of the night, make it mysterious. And I think he had a lot of fun with it. I hope you did, at least, Cam.
I did. And that episode's only an hour, and that's the crappy part, because like one of our players was very tired. So my girlfriend, actually, she passed out mid-session, so we had to stop. So it's going to be like one of those half ones. So it's like, you know, you have like 15, and then you have 15, but like 15 and a half is what it's going to be. It's going to be like half an episode. Just this little thing of it. Pretty much the whole thing is like some really big information's being said. They're setting themselves up to go do this thing. And then the other half is literally him fucking pissed drunk, ending up somewhere random.
You should just do like a side one shot of him on his solo like drunk adventure, and just see where it ties. That you want chaos, man? Just throw like whatever spaghetti at the board and see what sticks.
I should record another just like a short another like short hour session to put with that. So it's like this is what the party saw, you know, and there was just a blank moment during the night, you know, when they were resting, and then just have the other half of the episode be him. Literally just
wandering what was the wilderness. Going on while he
was yeah.
Oh my god, that's such a good idea.
We have to do that. I feel like make that episode so great for even and it,
and then I don't have to wait till next week for the next episode
because it'd just be me first and play. It'd just be me and you.
It's the beauty of the podcast format, right? Like you don't have to have everyone sit down to do the side and have them watch one guy do the side adventure.
Right,
they can follow up after.
And that was like the one thing is like, you know, she was sleeping and, you know, they had gotten to this place with her and they were waiting. They were trying to find him. So they like found this, you know, this is all spoilers. I don't know when this is going to be released yet. I haven't decided.
This should come after that episode is released, hopefully.
But like he had like a trail, he had left himself a trail where he had woken up butt naked was the trend of it in somewhere that he had no fucking clue in a tiny ass room where the door was only about 3 feet tall. This guy's 8 feet, 8 feet tall, eight
oh
feet
my God.
Tall,
Goliath. 8 feet tall, 300-pound Goliath.
Oh, that's what it is. I was like, what is he playing? That's so big. It's a Goliath.
It's a Goliath. Yeah. Yeah. He's fucking built like a brick shit house.
With flaming fists? What is
he's
he?
He's a monk.
He has
with the new rules, they added a little fun thing with Goliath where now they can do with their unarmed strikes or their attacks, they can put some of their giant ancestry in. So he chose Fire Giant. So he has a thing called.
No, that's cool.
Yeah, so he has a thing called. I can't remember what it is, but he has a couple charges per day. He has about three, and
so it's fires burn.
So every time he hits, he can also add a D10 of fire damage to a creature.
D10.
A D10.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he does 1d8+8 unarmed strike damage because he's a monk of the Drunken Master.
Well, and it's so much better now that we're like at the point where we are in our campaign, because I picked up that cursed item a few sessions ago And that gives me an ability called Serriet Blows. I don't know if you're familiar. But I get to add another I think it's a D8 every time I hit until I miss or don't do damage in a turn.
It's a D4.
So it's a D4?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the problem with
D8 is a lot, but even then, D4.
Yeah. A D4 is extra damage. So, but it stacks. So if he keeps hitting, it keeps stacking. So a D4 for the first one, 2D4, 3D4, and he has four attacks. So technically, he can get up to 3D4 extra damage on a hit. Plus, he can change whether he wants his blows to be, this is the monk thing, wants them to be bludgeoning damage or force damage.
Oh, force damage?
Yeah.
Good God. I bet you guys are punching way above your...
Oh, they are. I'm throwing CR 14
yeah.
creatures at these guys.
See,
I think I'm level 7.
Oh my God. Level 7 with that much damage output? That's crazy.
I'm so excited. Hey, and that's not I'm so excited.
Damage, that's not even our most damage focused build. My girlfriend plays a druid with a complete custom subclass that me and her had spent some time working on. She has, as a wolf, she has a thing called multi-attack. And since she's level 7...
it's crazy.
She can do two claw attacks and a bite attack. 2d10 plus 2d8 if she hits on all of that. Plus her strength modifier. And she has a belt of giant strength, which matches her wolf strength already. So she does... She could do upwards of like 50 to 60 damage in one turn. Plus... I have custom feats that I've built, and I have my feat system's much different than most. Every 4 levels, you get an ability improvement and a feat that your character improves.
Okay.
Every 2 levels, your character gets an optional feat, and it has to play into their character growing. And then you let me know what you want that feat to be, and then that's just it. It gives more of that that's personal, fun. Like, you know, as these people go through the story, they're starting to learn more things. They're starting to grow as a person. So these new abilities come into play.
Before we get too far away from how much damage potential her character has, I do want to say, and I mean no offense, she rolls really bad a lot.
Yeah, she does.
I don't.
You guys.
Although I will say, when she does roll good, it's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, it's
not. Yeah, hey, we had a Rune Knight fighter that's the same Dragonborn, and he's the same thing. Like, he rolled garbage, but he had like the craziest sword and all these abilities. So when he hit, it was like, here's 80 damage right to your face. And you're like, oh well, thanks for showing up 8 sessions later, but
at least you showed up.
Yeah, but at least you showed up.
So she has this custom feat that I called haste. It's called heightened skills is what it's called, or hastened skills. And she can spend a bonus action to give herself one turn of haste.
Okay.
So
that's not okay.
So she can either do a bite attack, a claw attack. She also has a pounce, but her multi-attack is just one. It's an action. It's an action, and she can do 3 attacks. And, you know, with haste, you can only do one attack action, or you can do one action.
Yeah.
You know? So she just does that twice, and we're talking like 70, 80 damage minimum.
Yeah.
It's like 6 swings plus right there.
But how many times was it? Just once?
Just once.
The bonus action?
Once per combat, she can vote.
I think that's fair. That's pretty much like action surge on a fighter, right?
Yeah, it's like action surge, and I mean, with what she is, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I wish I could share
that's
that,
pretty cool.
He's here. So.
Yeah, no, we get it.
No,
yeah, that's
spoilers.
Pretty cool. I like that idea of like every 4 levels you're giving a feat, but probably not like, you know, great weapon master or anything crazy.
Oh, I give them free range because whatever they choose, you know, that's their character growing. I mean,
and yeah, that's okay. That's
I
fair.
Just figure out my balance. So it took me a while to figure out their balance because at level 5, they took on a fucking dragon, a young dragon.
Hey, so did they.
So like, I mean, just.
But we got really creative
two
about
rounds,
it on that.
200 extra health, easily. 2 rounds. They fucking destroyed that dragon.
Yeah. When I ran it for them, it was the final battle of the Lost Mines of Phandelver, at that point, they all had magic items, so the resistance didn't matter. And they also got their hands on TNT, and I made the mistake of giving an invisibility potion. So the paladin turned invisible, flew up, and with an insane nat 20, got the TNT in the mouth of the dragon. And it just wrecked this thing. And then it landed, and they just dumpstered, and I was very disappointed. I also ran it max HP, like not the average. I think it was like an additional.
I ran max plus 200, and they did it in two rounds.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's always surprising what players can do, because sometimes when I'm like planning a session, I always think like, damn, this thing's going to kill them. And it doesn't even get a turn, you know?
Right.
Sometimes like I underestimate
your initiative and you're like, fuck, man. I don't even.
Yeah, that's definitely happened. And like, it's always a creature that I'm so excited for, you know, like I can't wait. And then it just dies and you're like, oh, fuck,
I didn't even get to use this.
You can't even play it at that point. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That happened. And then I found after that was the turning point to, okay, I'm not just like, you know, I was trying to go easy, trying to make it, you know, a little bit of a challenge. No, I'm going to throw fucking high ass shit at you guys because you guys are retarded. And if it kills you, oh, fucking well, because you guys are too goddamn broken for low stuff.
Yep.
Little demigods, little rugrat demigods running around in the world.
Pretty much.
You don't know what they're up to.
I have gotten too big for my britches a few times and just been decimated, though. Yep. Like, yep. There was a, was it the dwarven bounty hunter?
Yeah, so they met a dwarven bounty hunter in a tavern, and he got all big in his britches, and I rolled a 20, and I rolled a natural 20. His initiative was a plus 6, so he had a 26 initiative. He was the first one to go. Damocles is in right in his face. One turn, I did 110 damage. He blocked 10 of it. So I did 91 damage to him.
That's insane.
And he was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Help. Help me. Yeah. Help me. Help.
Run.
Oh no.
And that was at that moment. I'm like, I'm at the CR they need to be at, because if I'm able to do that, and they still win in the end, that I'm okay. I can bump it up a little bit more. You know, it's letting me know. But if I'm able to drop one, because there for a while, I had not touched any of them. Like they had not hit the ground because of unconscious once. And now I'm at the point where I'm like, I am fucking these guys up because they have it coming. they've ruined a lot of my fun.
I definitely know. Like, I know it might sound bad, but it is a little bit of a satisfying feeling when your monster actually works.
When it punches and, for once, yeah, and it doesn't fall and over.
There's definitely been situations where, like, we'll have a few sessions, and just for, like, my sake, I'm always like, man, guys, just so you know, like, this is going to be a tough fight. And then they just stomp, right? And it feels bad, but then the next fight could be like the most mundane thing, like a solo goblin, and they just can't hit him, and he's critting, and it just feels good for them to like get knocked down one peg, so that the challenge is back.
Yeah,
it's a weird feeling, but I know giving them that power fantasy of like being heroes and like conquering the thing is always great, but it's also I think more fun even as me for a player, like when two of my parties down, then I'm like shit's hit the fan, you know, like I gotta think, what am I gonna do next turn, like what do I bring him back, do I swing, like it just makes the mind go a lot better, and I just like seeing my friends stressed, to be honest.
Honestly
yeah, it's true. He really does, frankly. Like being a player at his table like is anxiety inducing, but I think I've done the opposite to like the same thing to him on multiple different levels.
I
usually
just
I don't
thing,
bring anything,
you know?
Standard to the table, like because he's encyclopedic knowledge means I have to show up with something that's unusual and unexpected.
Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I love like homebrewing creatures, even like the most mundane thing. One of the first one shots I ran back before I ever did any DMing was like this transmutation wizard that wanted to combine spells and beasts. So the whole one shot was like bears with burning hands, you know, or like a swarm of wasps that do shock and grasp. And like, there was just like weird things like that going on, but because I was running the game for two DMs who kind of knew everything. So I wanted to just like spice it up a little bit, mix it up, you know,
surprise them.
And I think that has definitely like shaped how I create my monsters moving forward. Like, it's always great to have this big brute creature, but also like, what else can it do? How can it be like fantastical, you know?
I think aside from it, like being fantastical too, like what we both tend to do with our creatures is like, how is it unusual as well? Like, what makes it kind of tick outside of what the expectation of a creature is? So it's like, there's this whole thing with storytelling where you want to undermine the expectations, right? And kind of do something different. But the fun is like, one thing I did with Aura and like a few of our other players in one of these like anthology one shots is it was an intro fight, which was my mistake was like, I like to overestimate them a little bit because that usually means I'm probably closer to the realm of possibility, but I could see in their faces where like, this thing, I think I ran it. The idea of it was called like a fractured clay golem. So it was a golem at its core, the stat block with a slightly smaller health pool. But every time you hit it, its health pool would break, like, and another clay golem would fall out of it, a smaller one with like 20 hit points or 30 hit points. I can't remember what it was. And it got to a point where they kept hitting it, and it just was an overwhelming swarm of clay golems just swinging at them.
Terrifying.
This was the start of a one shot. This wasn't even like the big fight. Like, was supposed to be like a, I'm going to tap you for some resources and see how it goes. But they just kept punching it. And punching it means more little things are going to fall. And the formula turned into, we got to get rid of the little things first before we go after the big thing. Each time a little thing falls, we need to change our strategy. So that like made the game a little more like unusual instead of, you know, it's not the big brute, you know. It still had the big brute characteristics. It still hit like a truck when it swung on its own. So it was still a threat. But the little guys, you know, spiced it up. And you could see the anxiety in their faces. They're like, oh my God, this is kind of like a raid, and we have to go to four other checkpoints, and there are four other bad things we have to fight. None of which, by the way, went as terribly as that first fight for them at the start of the session.
That was bad. And he even said, he's like, I just wanted to tap your resources, and we're like, we have no more resources, man. Like, this was the boss fight, like, right off the bat.
Oh. So it swings both ways sometimes, the pendulum, I think. But, like, that wasn't so bad because it's structurally, like, it worked with the rest of the story, and it also tied them into the other fights. And, you know, you throw them a couple bones here and there. They get some recovery. They get some rest. And there's some deities evolved. You don't know what they're up to. They're cooking in the background. It was fun. And I really liked that creature. I don't think we'll, like, revisit it because it's just not, like, it doesn't have all of the flavor that we try to put into everything else we do. But stuff like that, like little minor twists like that when we were DMing on our own before we started co-writing all of this like massive library of content that we've been working on, I think that was the beginnings of, you know, making things work really well and finding our flow. Because we actually ended up, I think, revisiting a bunch of those creatures and kind of rewriting them as pilots to the first round of development of the Dungeon Report. The Dungeon Report really didn't exist like as an idea until like a couple of years ago, and then we spent a year in development after that too, because nothing was satisfying to us. Apparently, you know, we don't know where to stop.
That's the problem. I mean like, this coming into this podcast thing was a year of writing a campaign, and then it was a couple months of, I'm gonna do this, you know, this thing's gonna happen, and we're just gonna go all for it.
It's good. It's so healthy to do. Honestly, I'm so happy we did it the way we did it. Otherwise, we really would have struggled a lot more. We're still learning a lot, and this is really challenging to maintain and keep up and make sure the quality and the work is always there. But I think if we hadn't spent all that kind of early days work building it up and learning from other people and having discussions on the side and testing our material, like, we would have so many more problems right now.
Yeah.
Aside from the ones that we have, like, just
there are definitely times where I've told them, like, you know, it's a good thing we took like that extra month because these things that you said weren't going to be a problem, but then we worked on it. Well, now we have the solution for it, you know?
Hold on. I distinctly remember you being the one. Are we going to launch this week? Are we going to launch
this week?
Well,
yeah, because
launch this week?
Listen, there's only so long that you can do something without sharing it.
100%.
Right? 100%. Like we were developing this stuff I'm going to say February of last year. Maybe even earlier. Like I was just making stat blocks and Hovog was like making stories and that's how it started. And then we kind of came together and we're like, well, why don't we try this idea? Why don't we try that idea? And it just became like a hobby we did like after work. And when it started to become an actual thing, you know, like we got the website, we got the Instagram, we got the domains, like all that stuff is going, the art, everything started developing. It got to a point where it felt like we were nitpicking before launch. Like, oh, but what if this happens? We need to be prepared. And that was starting to bother me. I was like, no, I just want to share this with people. I want to see like feedback. I want to know what people think of our stuff. And the longer we don't do that, the less interested I'm going to be to just do this between the two of us.
Thank God for the nitpicking, though.
I know. Yes. It's always good to be prepared, but you know.
100%.
We practically set ourselves on fire in the first month doing this because we were so frustrated. we put everything together and we like posted things and we're just like, oh my God, it's not working. Like nothing works. Nothing is sending. Nothing is loading. What is going on? But now it feels a little more sustainable. And we're just excited to like the pipeline is so far reaching now, and there's just so many things that we've written that we just want to get to the next one and just get it out there. It's really a weird feeling.
I was so excited. We recorded on the Friday and then we scheduled it for Memorial Day, the Monday. And I was like, yes,
when is the next
one? Yes, and then we only play for like 7 seconds.
Who's our next game?
Still haven't quite gotten over it yet. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Don't worry, we're gonna do that little bit behind the scenes, and then that will see your
walk. Do it, man. Do it.
Well, I think we're coming right on the edge of our time. You guys have been awesome guests. Would you guys like to plug yourselves?
Sure. Yeah.
I'll let him do it.
Let the face run from his mouth. We were so happy to be here. This was a lot of fun. The time flew by. The discussion was fantastic. We're happy to share all of our content with people. We recently hit 500 subscribers on Instagram or followers on Instagram and released a whole bunch of free content. So if you visit us at thedungeonreport.com, thedungeonreport.com, you can find a whole bunch of the goblins that are themed around the lore of our organization and some of the fun stuff that goes along with them. And beyond that, you know, we have our weekly drops, which we share on all of our social media platforms, but we primarily live on Instagram at the Dungeon Report. And frankly, we're just really excited to see that people are looking for this kind of stuff. And we're super, super chuffed to be able to share it with them and have them play with it and make it their own, really, because everything we do, we want to do for the DMs to have an opportunity to be more creative and less hung up on development. We're trying to do some of the development for the DMs and support their creative process. So that's our plug, man. That's our full and complete plug. Really, really appreciate this. This was a lot
of fun. We'll have to have you guys
back. We will have a 30-minute Chuck Norris
session.
There's
still more we would love to talk about with you guys. I think we just scratched the surface on some of the topics that we had in the backgrounds, but we would definitely love to have you guys back. We'll have to plan that.
We need to revisit Shrek Norris.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe with Crit 1 and Dunn on board, because you know they've got some creative skin in that game.
So we had that 30-minute Chuck Norris thing with some of the people from Nat 1 and Dunn, and we'll have to get Nat 1 and Dunn. We'll have to get some Crit 1 and Dunn. We'll just have to get a bunch of people and just have an hour session talking about how we can turn Chuck Norris into a D&D character and the expansive lore behind D&D Chuck Norris.
I can't wait.
Fired up, man. We're game. We're totally
I'm already thinking.
You don't know how much you've derailed our next like two or three development sessions.
Yeah.
we're wasting so much time on this. It's unreal.
Horse themed Chuck's knuckle dusters.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, thank you guys again. We will definitely have to have you come back on. It was a blast talking to you guys, and we definitely want to talk about more because you guys are, you guys love to talk, and I mean, I'm enjoying it. You guys we've talked about a lot of fun things. Do go check these guys out. They make some really cool stuff. I'm excited to try some of your stuff since I've joined your exclusive little club behind the scenes. I think that cuts it here. Go check out the rest of our Coffee Table Talks to see all the other interesting guests we've had on. Go check out these guys again at Instagram at The Dungeon Report and at thedungeonreport.com for all of their supplements of monsters and items. Now, take care and stay well caffeinated. I love the caffeinated chaos.